Hello, beloved community. Welcome to Out on the Edge, where co-hosts Judy McCord, Robin Hamilton, and Betty Priu invite folks to discuss topics relevant to being gay and gray in these interesting times. Today, October 13th, 2025, our guest is Casey Fountain. Casey is a queer content creator, former legislative assistant with the North Carolina General Assembly, and currently the organizer for the Equality NC Triangle Chapter. Our show is brought to you by the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging. We broadcast every Monday afternoon, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, over WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill Carborough, at 103.5 FM. And we also stream over WCOMFM.org. You can find previous shows on the Orange County Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/OOTE. The Department on Aging website also explains the wide, wide range of elder and caregiver resources and services available in Orange County. On this Indigenous Peoples Day, we acknowledge that the town of Carborough, where we sit, and the surrounding land was originally part of the Saponi Peoples Territory, which also included the Eno, Tutelo, and Shikori Nations. Judy, now over to you for today's show.
Thank you, Betty, and welcome, Casey. It's so great to have you here on the radio with us. I'm just really looking forward to introducing you to my folks.
Absolutely.
My
Thank
peeps
you guys so much
there.
For having me.
I want to start first with your personal story. You're here because I met you in your capacity as the organizer for my Equality North Carolina chapter and have been just really tickled to have you running this particular.
Thank you.
So much to partner with you on various and sundry things.
Yes,
I would like to know how you ended up in that position.
Sure.
What brought you to this particular place in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again for having me. I'm very excited to be here. I'm Casey, as was said. I got started with Equality NC first through work in government. So when I got out of college, I guess I was waiting tables and bartending for a little while, but I eventually got an internship at the North Carolina General Assembly. I had majored in policy studies and communications, so I knew that government nonprofit work was sort of what I wanted to do. My first internship there was with, at the time, Senator Rachel Hunt, who's now Lieutenant Governor Rachel Hunt. Congrats to her.
Yes.
And after that, I got promoted. I went on to be the legislative assistant to Deb Butler, who is a Wilmington representative for North Carolina. She's also one of the only LGBTQ people in the North Carolina General Assembly. So it was really great to work with her and to work on LGBTQ issues with her in law. And then about a year of doing that, I got an offer from Equality North Carolina to come and be their triangle organizer so I would get to focus more on LGBTQ issues, which is what I have come to be just really, really passionate about. So now I am our triangle organizer, so Chapel Hill, Durham, Raleigh, and everything in between, and a little bit outside, I guess. I cover those areas, and I work on outreach, engagement, keeping folks informed, giving them the resources they need to navigate everything that is going on right now for the LGBTQ community. And then, I guess last but not least, just creating spaces for queer joy amidst everything that is going on. I think that having that space to come together and to just be ourselves and to continue enjoying our lives here, to continue existing here, is a form of advocacy and rebellion in itself. So that's probably my favorite part of my job right now.
That explains a lot. That's what I look forward to doing, is bringing joy to our lives and providing joy for my community members. And that's what the radio station's about. We're reaching out. This is a safe place. We're happy to be us. And that's probably why I had you on my list, I'm guessing. I would like to know your story as a human being, not as a person with a job. But
sure.
How was your growing up and coming out story.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, I guess before I, like, go all the way back into my youth and all of that wonderful stuff, I'll tell folks I use they, them pronouns, and I identify as pansexual, which for those of you who don't know, that just means that you can be attracted to any gender. Gender isn't necessarily a factor in your attraction. And I also identify as gender fluid, which means that your gender can change from one day to the next, from one week to the next. Labels like transgender and non-binary also work. I'm not picky. But if to get specific, that is how I identify. And I did not come out as either pansexual or gender fluid, I think, until my sophomore year of college. So it took a minute. It took me a minute. There's never a bad time to come out, but I had a lot of LGBTQ friends that were out, and just none of their labels, none of their titles really resonated with me and fit with me. And so I guess I was nervous. I was like, I don't want to claim something that's not mine, or, you know, and I also didn't know words like pansexual and non-binary at the time until I got to college. But I obviously, I was always queer. I remember probably at least as early as like age 11, I started struggling a lot when I hit puberty with anxiety, depression. At age 13, I was even diagnosed with an eating disorder. I think that going through puberty just felt very uncomfortable for me, but I couldn't articulate why. It feels uncomfortable for everybody, right? And that's, and I mean, I guess I sort of did try to articulate why. I would talk to my parents, who are very wonderful and accepting and supportive. And as a kid, I would talk to them and be like, I don't know. I feel really awkward in my skin all the time. Some days I don't want to look at myself in the mirror. Some days I feel, you know, and my parents, to the best of their knowledge, like, were like, well, that's kind of how everybody feels when they go through puberty, right? Because
yeah,
I didn't have the language to express that it was a little bit different than what most people were feeling. Everybody feels awkward going through puberty. It's horrible. Like, it sucks.
Yes.
So, but for me, it was a little bit different, but I just didn't have the language to articulate why. Now, I was really fortunate as a kid because I had supportive parents who, even though we didn't have the language at the time, they noticed like the anxiety and the depression, and they were able to get me some help. I went to therapy. I got treated for an anxiety disorder. But that gave me, you know, the ability to kind of keep going along, but
keep your feet planted.
Right. Even through high school, I still just really continued to struggle with a lot of body image issues, a lot of confusion. I told my mom once, I was like, after I had come out, we were having lunch or something, and I told her, I was like, I'm just now realizing that not everyone like ended up having a full on like mental breakdown and like crying when they had to go bra shopping as a kid. Like, and my mom is like, yeah, I thought that was kind of weird. And I always dreaded taking you because I knew it was going to be this, but I didn't know why, you know, like, so it wasn't until I got to college that I learned the words non-binary or gender fluid or pansexual. And I met other people who were experiencing those same things. And I remember just being so relieved. I was like, oh my God, I'm not crazy. You know, like I just had spent my whole life because I had, you know, wondered like some days I was like, I feel like I am transgender. I feel like today I'm like, I really want to be a boy. That is how I feel. The body I'm in doesn't feel right. And then other days I wouldn't feel like that. Other days I would feel very comfortable. And so again, I just didn't know anybody who was experiencing that. I thought I was just going nuts. And then meeting other people that were like, no, this is a thing that does happen and there's a word for it, was a really big relief.
I'm sure for me.
And Casey, I just have to interject, you know, listening to you, I think with the elders who would be listening to our broadcast today, this is so enlightening from like a grandparent's parents' point of view, but also I also wonder how many of our contemporaries, Judy, you and me, felt that same way but never found words for this. Just you talking about it could help somebody start looking around for the words for how different they feel.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing all that.
True that.
Oh my gosh, well, I hope so. Again, yeah, as I said, there's no age limit on coming out, and some people might just not have the language. I still don't think we have all the language for different identities
That's probably true.
You know, labels and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
I look forward to the day when we get rid of those labels altogether, and I can say, I identify as Judy.
I identify as Judy. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's I probably won't live to see that, but it would be really cool.
My partner and I talk about this all the time, this idea of, like, labels and language and how important is it versus how not important is it. And I think we've the conclusion that we've come to, you know, in our grand 24 years of age is that, you know, they can be really important and they can also not be really important. And it's going to be different for everybody. So my partner's on the spectrum. So the labeling thing has never really stuck with them. Like, they are just kind of I envy them because they don't care what anybody thinks or how anybody really addresses them at all.
Right.
They're like, I don't care how anybody perceives me because I know who I am, and I'm, you know, and I envy them for that, and I admire them a lot for that. But for someone like me who did not experience that or didn't, you know, grow
didn't
up that way.
Safe.
Right. Finding a label that did work for me or that fit to, like, give me this sense of, like, oh, other people are experiencing this and I'm not alone did mean a lot to me. So I think it can go either way, you know.
And there's another piece of it. Using a label and sharing it in a safe space allows somebody who may be experiencing the same thing to actually go, oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Another piece is by sharing that my husband's transgender, I've had people say, I never know anybody who was transgender, and oh my God, you know, they just go blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it's a chance for some people who don't know to say, wait, really?
Mm-hmm.
And they begin to open up a little bit to knowing what a transgender person experiences.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as we experience all of this, you know, dehumanization from our government and from, you know, like it, I think it is really powerful to put a face to the issue that supposedly they're trying to convince people is so scary. I'm like, no, you do actually probably know a trans person. You do actually probably know an LGBTQ person.
You probably were in the restroom with a transgender person once upon a time, and you didn't get it.
Exactly.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So I think putting a face to that and letting people see, like, we're just people, we're just human beings is really powerful.
Yeah. And we also have to honor that there are some people who are very frightened and fearful of violence, and they cannot come out.
Yeah.
Or they need to go back in the closet just to be safe. And that's very real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what else do I have? When you came out, how did your relationship with your family members and your friends change, if at all?
Sure. So I actually came out to two of my friends first, one of whom had already come out as non-binary. So I felt very comfortable going to them and talking to them about it, about what I was feeling and what I was experiencing. And then I came out to my best friend, who, like, we've been best friends since we were kids. Our parents were friends, and so we grew up together. And I came out to her, and she was very loving and kind and supportive. And so I don't know that, like, you know, my relationships there with the really, really important people in my life didn't change very much. And I felt really fortunate for that with the really important friends.
That's great.
I did have some friends in college who were, which baffled me, like, they were also part of the queer community. And when I came out, I was met with some, you know, well, you know, this seems like really fast and, like, all of a sudden, and, like, we're not, you know, very much like a, I felt kind of like they were protecting, like, a something that didn't need to be protected, I guess. Like, they just, they didn't know anybody who had come out as late as I had. So they, I was borderline accused of, like, faking it, or, like, you're not serious, or you're not, you know.
Or you made that up.
And, right.
I've heard that before.
Which I guess I expected from, like, straight people, but I didn't expect it from other LGBTQ people, but that is kind of the perception that I received from some of my friends, not from all of them, which I think was a little upsetting. But again, then I found out that that is unfortunately actually a pretty common thing that people experience. So
I know when I told my friends that my husband used to be my wife, they would, oh, you're in trouble now. He's going to beat you because he's a man, and he's going to.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, oh, wait, what? What?
Yeah, it kind of shows that, you know, stereotypes live in all kinds of people's brains, you know, really in all of us. I think we don't understand the stereotypes and the bigotries we carry until we start articulating them.
Right.
And a dear, dear friend points out that that's not necessarily true. So, interesting.
I just heard a lot of the similar, like, but I mean, you've never dated a woman, so how are you? And I'm like, because I wasn't out. Like, I had crushes on plenty of women, but I was too scared to ask them out because I didn't think that was like an okay thing. You know what I mean?
Right,
and
right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of can laugh about it now because obviously it's a little bit silly. But yeah, people do. They have these like pre-existing, you know, biases, even within our own community, which is unfortunate. But I also think that we can combat them by having conversations like this and by saying, you know, like, look, everybody, you need to just take everybody at face value that they are who they say they are and be welcoming and accepting and not, you know, try to police or worry about, who can be in the club type of thing. I'm like, that's not what we're about. Like,
you're not lesbian enough. I get it.
Right, right. Exactly. Or you're not trans enough or you're not. Yeah.
Or am I still a lesbian now that my husband is trans and has come out as trans?
Right.
Are you still a lesbian?
And it so much doesn't matter to your day-to-day life of walking around and cooking food and
grocery shopping and taking out the trash.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The lifestyle we chose.
Right. but I've heard the same. You said like, oh, you're not lesbian enough. I've heard the you're not trans enough because I use the transgender label when it fit, because it's an umbrella term, you know, there's a bunch of identities under the transgender umbrella. But I've heard it, you know, said plenty of times that, well, you shouldn't claim that or you can have that because you're not always a boy. And sometimes you go back and forth or, you know, and I'm over here, you know, now, there is never any requirement for how trans someone should be because people don't always have the access to get on hormone therapy or to have the surgeries they want to have or to, you know, get the medical care that they need, have the money to go buy the clothes that they want to wear.
It's a pretty privileged thing to actually,
issue.
Especially physically transition or clothes or all that, you know.
And so it is an access issue. And so obviously, you know, people are still entitled to be gendered correctly, even if they can't afford, you know, the type of transition that they want. But then there are also people like me who don't want the same exact kind of transition that other trans people seek. And I think that that is okay. And that's allowed. Some non-binary people won't go through any physical transition for whatever reason that they choose. And that doesn't mean that they're not non-binary. You know, they still deserve to be addressed by the right pronouns and the right name and everything. But yeah, I do find it kind of funny that, you know, I'm very fortunate. I've had top surgery. I had top surgery in January and I got a breast reduction and I've been on hormone therapy since I was 21. They call it in the medical community. I don't like this word. I think we should change it. This is what is called in the medical community. They call it microdosing, which to me sounds like you're doing drugs. I'm like, maybe we should change it. But it just means that if you are somebody who is non-binary or gender fluid, you can take a small dose of hormone therapy rather than like a large one for someone who might be looking to fully transition. So
that makes
it
sense.
Gave me more fluidity. Like, you know, it made my face a little more androgynous looking, made my body a little bit more, you know, like I can like have muscles now, which is really cool that I've always wanted. And, made my voice a little more androgynous, a little bit deeper. And so, you know, I can present either way. It gave me that fluidity and flexibility, which I really, really like. Before, if there were days where I was feeling like more masculine or more like a boy, I couldn't really present as one. I would still get misgendered in public all the time. And now that doesn't really happen. Now I face other stuff now that I am very androgynous presenting, and people can't always pinpoint if I am a boy or a girl right off the bat, because sometimes I'm not, sometimes I'm in the middle, right? And so I've had like little kids come out and like will just ask me like right away, like, are you a boy or a girl? And their parents are always so embarrassed, and I want to like tell their parents, like, that was so gender affirming that your child just asked me that. Like, you don't need to be embarrassed about it. That's what I want. Yeah, that's what I was going for. So, you know, stuff like that still happens, but I still, now that I've, you know, had hormone therapy and breast reduction, I get people that are like, well, you're not transgender enough, you're not, you know, have the right to know. So my message is just that, you know, like, you're trans because you say you're trans, and that that anybody can claim that label if they would like it and if it makes them feel good. And
it boils down to, you know, trust the person who's speaking.
Exactly.
You know, and that works really well in pretty much all walks of life. Really,
it does. Yeah, it does. I wrote a haiku. This was when the trans women were beginning to get, and still get, all kinds of grief. Don't contradict me. If I say I'm a woman, it means that I am.
I love that.
Ba-ding.
Poetry.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the idea that things can't exist or be real because we haven't experienced them directly has always kind of baffled me. You know, I'm like, no, there are plenty of things that I don't experience.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they aren't real, because other people experience them,
right,
and will be willing to share their experiences.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Okay, I got off on a tangent. I started talking about my friends and then labels and all this wonderful
stuff. Tangents are fine.
Yes. But after I came out to my two friends, I came out to my parents. And my parents, as a disclaimer, are some of the most wonderful, warm, accepting, inclusive people I know. Even before I came out, they were kind of a safe space for a lot of my friends who were LGBTQ that did not have that at home. And I always joke with them that I think if I had said, you know, I'm transgender or I'm a lesbian, like, they would have knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, I'm pansexual and gender fluid, and I think they kind of did a double. They were like, what? I don't. My mom straight up, she was like, I don't know what those things mean. Like, full disclosure. And my dad, I think, did, which isn't, this is a common mistake, and he has since, you know, like, learned a mistake that I think some parents make, where I say, well, you know, I'm gender fluid, so it changes every day. And he said, well, are you sure that maybe you're just not confused then, or if it's not a really, you know? And I said, no, just because I'm not a boy every single day, or I'm not, you know, transitioning within the binary, that doesn't mean that I'm not very sure about who I am. And I'm the kind of person that, I've always been a perfectionist. And I used that to explain it to him. I was like, you know me, I'm not going to come out or commit to something unless I'm like 100%
right,
sure,
right,
which I don't think should be the case. Anybody should feel free, if they're questioning, if they aren't sure, to talk about it, to come out about it.
Oh yeah.
I was always in my own head about that kind of stuff, where I was like, if I do this, I need to be 100% sure. And I'm like that with every aspect of life, not just coming out.
Right.
So I, you know, explained it to them, and it took them a minute, to really understand, to get on board, and to, you know, be understanding that it was something that they had to practice. I think that was a big one, because they had plenty of gay nephews, lesbian friends of mine that, like, they didn't have to do anything to alter their behavior. They just had to be accepting, and that was
right,
enough. And
right.
Then here I'm asking them to change the way that they're addressing me, to try to change the way that they perceive me in their own heads, right? Like, I'm not a girl anymore, at least not all the time. And, you know, I want you to use they, them pronouns. And it did. It took like a couple months before they started regularly addressing me that way. And that, unfortunately, I think that's a pretty good timeline for most most family members, because they've been calling me one thing my whole life, and so it takes time to kind of change your habits and your brain to do that. But they did, they practiced at it, they worked at it, and I'm really, really grateful for that.
That's fabulous. I know that many of our contemporaries have grandchildren who are either gender fluid or transgender, and the grandparents could definitely get gay or lesbian, and sometimes transgender is okay, but anything changing pronouns, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's been difficult for a lot of us. I still work on it. Do you have any advice for us?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I would tell people not to beat yourself up. I think that older generations think that changing pronouns comes naturally to the younger generation, and it doesn't. I use they them pronouns myself, and one of my friends, who I had referred to as she her their whole life, came out to me, and even someone who uses they them pronouns myself, it took me a minute to adjust the way I was talking about them. I had to really commit, and I had to practice, and I had to reshape my own vocabulary. So don't be discouraged if you're not acing it right off the bat, because it's hard to change the way we've been referring to somebody our entire lives. Right. It's hard to change that in our own brains. Always practice. There's tons of ways to do it. There's little online quizzes and stuff you can do, but I have found the easiest way to do it is to just talk out loud to yourself. When I was practicing for my friend, I would do it in the shower a lot in the morning. I would just say a paragraph that describes them. And I would just pretend I was talking about them to somebody. Or I would have actual conversations with my parents, with my fiance, where we would sit down and we would talk about the person. And I would just use they, them pronoun. We would correct each other. We would catch each other. And then writing paragraphs can also help too, because I get that's why they teach you flashcards in school, right? Is the writing it down will really help you remember. And I was kind of always a non-believer of that in school. But now that I'm doing it in this instance, I'm it really does help to write it to help it stick in your brain.
I hadn't thought of that. That makes total sense.
Yeah. Again, I was am I really going to write that? And then I did start writing it, and it did really help. So I was I guess there is some truth to that after all. But don't shy away from the work just because it's going to take time, right? Just because it might take a minute. You will, unfortunately, misgender your grandkid or your kid. It's going to happen. One tip I always give that people are often surprised by, and then I explain it and they get it, is when you do misgender somebody, you don't need to make a huge apology about it. A very simple, they were going to, the store to get a very simple correction like that is perfect. And that's not to say that you're not trying to downplay it. You're not trying. You can understand that it is a big deal and that it is important. But if you make a big apology, what's going to happen is the person that you just misgendered is going to feel like they have to comfort you, or that they have to say something like, oh, no, it's all right. Don't worry about it, even though it isn't all right. And you should worry about it a little bit.
Right.
So rather than put it just makes it about you instead of them, right? It puts it on them to be comforting you, or to be someone explained it to me using the white woman's tears analogy, which I don't know if anyone else is familiar with that, but I was at the time, so it helped me, where it says, if you're talking to white women about racism and they start to get emotional or cry, you need to tell them to leave the room, because they're taking away from the focus. The focus is now going to be on them to comfort them, or to make them, rather than talking about racism, which is what the conversation should be about. And it's a similar dynamic here, is that we know that you're sorry and that you recognize what a big deal it is. And you can show us that by continuing to practice and continuing to get better and better each time, rather than making an apology and putting us in the position of just having to comfort or having to. And again, very innocent mistake that a lot of people make. And I understand where they're coming from, but it is actually easier on the person if you just correct yourself and move on. Quick apology and then keep going.
Actually, that for the person who is listening, the person who has been misgendered, it's really awesome to notice that somebody's paying attention and correcting themselves, and it's no big deal. That's just really awesome. Well, we have to take a second here for a station break.
Yeah, give
and over
you guys
to you,
a chance
Betty.
To take a few deep breaths. I'll just jump in here with a few public service announcements that we want to make sure get out to everybody listening. One is for our elders, 65 and older. Reminder that open enrollment for Medicare starts this Wednesday, October 15th. It goes to December 7th, so it's quite a bit of time. But if you are not sure if your current Medicare choices or your new ones really fit you, the Orange County Department on Aging has people on staff who will help talk you through your options and think about and choose the things that are best for you, because unfortunately our Medicare options change from year to year. We know this. So if you want more information about how you can get help, you can get online and look for the OrangeCountyNC.gov/aging website. Get there and choose Medicare assistance. The state also provides assistance in making good selections. People with the Orange County Department on Aging can put you in touch with those folks too. So there is help through the confusing jungle of Medicare options. So that's one. And two, this is for people of all ages listening. Remember, we've got elections coming up in November. This November, not just next November, huge elections. It's important to check your voter registration status if you haven't. A lot of different things have been going on in terms of what's required by the state to have on file for people to have a legal current voter registration status. So one of the ways you can check this is to, again, go to OrangeCountyNC.gov. Yeah, that's right. And go look for voter registration information. That should eventually get you to a list where you can type in your name and check to see if your voter registration is active and valid. It's important for us all to stand up for ourselves and our communities. Go vote.
Yeah.
So
some of the requirements have changed as well. So some of us who think we have been registered may not be. The registration may have
been,
it's being reviewed.
Yes, changes. And, you know, which means that just because your registration was valid doesn't mean it's going to be honored. So we need to be on top of that. So please, everybody listening, go double check your voter registration status as soon as you can.
Thank you, Betty.
Okay, on
well,
with the
let's
show.
See. I'm interested in what your dreams are for your future. How do you see your life changing next month and in the future beyond that?
Sure. I guess I sort of skipped over this when we were talking about, like, how did you come out and what were family and friends' reactions and stuff like that. But I guess because I didn't ever really have to come out to my fiancé, because we started dating when I was already out. My fiance's name is Steven. They use they, them, or he, him pronouns. And we're going to get married on November 8th. So we're super, super excited. We actually are technically already married on paper. We went and did it in December of 2024 after Trump won the election, just because we were not sure. I am still registered as, you know, I have the female sex marker on my birth certificate and on my driver's license. But since I have started HRT, there are some medical records that label me as intersex now, which is more accurate to what I am because I'm on hormone therapy. So we wanted to be extra safe and make sure that, you know, that it was still going to be legal get it done, to just get it out of the way.
Right.
And also just, you know, for visa purposes, as if we, you know, God forbid, needed to get out of the country quickly, then it's much easier to do that when you're married on paper legally. But we're having our like ceremony with our friends and family in November, and then we'll honeymoon in Virginia for like a week. So we're very, very excited for that. I had this really dumb thought when I came out that I was being very dramatic about it. I was like giving up on love. I was like, because I'm very confusing and I change genders all the time and I don't know that I'm ever going to find anybody who is okay with that or accepting. And newsflash, that was like a very dumb thing to think. And I would tell...
We all think we're exceptional and unique in the whole history of the world. Every one of us has felt that way.
So newsflash to anybody who, not even just any non-binary folks or trans folks or LGBTQ folks are listening, but anybody in general who is like, I'll never find love. Like, you can and you will and it will be okay. But I started dating them a couple months after I came out, and I hadn't started my transition. And I do remember being nervous, you know, when I was like, okay, I understand that you've said that you're totally fine with this, and that it does. They're also pansexual, so they're like, it doesn't really change, you know, it's not going to change how I feel about you or perceive you.
Right, right.
But there's always a little bit of anxiety, even if they are very reassuring and have given you no reason to think otherwise. You know, you just get nervous, but I have transitioned now, and I would argue that we're more in love than we were before. I feel very, very fortunate to have them. I'll quote them. I'll embarrass them. I don't know if they're listening. They might be at work, but I'll quote them and embarrass them. I remember I was having anxiety about it initially. It was before my breast reduction, and I was like, I'm just very nervous that like you're gonna think that you're cool with it, and then afterwards that you're not gonna be cool with it. I don't know, I just don't wanna, you know. And they kind of sat me down and they were like, you should not make yourself small or put yourself into a box for anybody, including me. And if somebody couldn't love you because you refused to do that, then you don't want to be with them anyway. And they're like, and I'm not that person. I never will be. And I never have been. And they are not. But I really love that. And I say that to myself a lot over and over again. If I'm ever introducing myself or I'm trying to appear, you know, like more one way or the other or decide, you know, like I tell myself that a lot. I'm like, you should not fit yourself into a box for anybody.
Right.
So I'm very, very excited for that. And then, down the road, I mean, oh my gosh, I think one of the tragedies, honestly, about everything that is happening right now is that it is very hard to make long-term plans, especially for people my age. And that's not just talking about like, oh, we don't know if, you know, we're going to be able to stay here type of thing. It's also just little things, like, I guess not little things, but more mundane things like home ownership. It's just so out of reach for everybody in our demographic right now.
Not surprised to hear that. I've thought of that too. There's way too much gig employment and contract employment and things that are so unstable. You can't really focus on saving the money for home ownership or for big things.
And that, or even to pay for health insurance.
It sucks. It sucks for you guys. And we grandparents really hate that for you guys.
We appreciate that. But again, home ownership is one of the biggest ways to acquire wealth here in general, all over the world, but especially here in America. Mm-hmm. So I know I think a lot of us are just in this weird limbo of, you know, yes, we want to think about the future, but I don't know how anybody is feasibly doing that right now at our age, you know, like, because we have no clue what's going to come next. We have no clue what to expect. Everything could change on a dime. We could have to uproot and go somewhere else or, but I will say that, you know, I feel very fortunate in that I have a partner who I'm like, you know what? I think whatever happens, as long as we're together, like we'll be okay. We'll figure it out. You know, we'll make do. And I think a lot of my friends are taking up similar mantras right now of like, you know what? I have my friends, I have my people. We're going to look out for each other. We're going to root ourselves in community. We're going to, you know, lift each other up and take care of each other, regardless of what happens. That being said, you know, I have a lot of things that I would really, really, really love to do one day. I really want to go. I would love to get my PhD in probably gender and sexuality studies because I love the historical part of it as well. Right. I want to study how gender and sex have changed and evolved like over the years. I think that has shaped so much of our society and doesn't always get the due consideration that it should. So many things don't get the due consideration that they should. But talking about the relationship between, you know, the LGBTQ community and the patriarchy and how all of that has played into the way that, you know, things are now in our present
day. It'd be awesome to get your perspective of how all this is evolving, because this work has been going on for decades, too.
Sure.
In the feminist community, lesbian community, all the people writing about the implications and the overt oppression caused by the patriarchy. So, gosh, it would be amazing to see someone like you carry that work forward.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, that is exactly what I would like to do someday, is to, you know, root myself in all that history and get a doctorate and be able to educate other people about, you know, the complexities of it. But I honestly, like, right now I'm just trying to get to November, which is where our wedding is. And then after that,
some things are more important than other things.
Yeah. After that, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I also really love, like, international work. I think down the road, I would really love to do that either in the government or nonprofit sphere, doing international queer advocacy work, I think is so important, because a lot of the things that are happening here are happening everywhere, and sometimes worse, honestly,
and
sometimes better. And I want to look at how people are doing better and try to bring that back here and be like, this
Wouldn't
is
that be
the
great?
Steps we should take. And so that's more for, like, career aspirations, I think. But as I said, it's, you know, it's tough to make future plans at this age right now with everything that is going on.
Right.
And what is this age? I don't think we asked you, if you don't mind telling us.
I'm 24.
Okay. Okay, great. Because we're in 60s, 70s, so it's, yeah. Thank you.
I think there's 10 years between us.
I don't know. You start forgetting after some point.
Yes, you hit a certain age.
Which birthday?
Kind of doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly,
you know,
exactly.
As long as you can function, that's about
I have to say, I feel younger every year just being around the community we've built here in Chapel Hill. It's so affirming and just delightful to have my new family here. Mm-hmm. I came from Franklin County, which was not a good place to be, if one was not white, Christian, all of that.
Yeah.
So getting here to Chapel Hill was like, whew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's been great. I want to know what you do when you want to step back from the work at Equality North Carolina and the work that's being done along with you in the country now that keeps your day going. For your job.
Keeps you sane, maybe.
What do you do to step aside from that and catch your breath?
Sure. And I give these tips to everybody, even people who aren't doing this work. But on the weekends, I try very, very hard to, like, I turn my work email off. And I try very hard to, like, not look at the news for the weekends, right? Because I have to look at the news every single day for work. That's part of my job, is getting those news alerts and keeping everybody up to date and making sure, you know, like, what do we need to address, and addressing a lot of, like, sometimes very rapid response stuff, rapidly changing stuff, compiling, you know, resources from our partners. And so I try to take off from looking at the news during the weekend, and that has really helped. I also am a big believer in taking a day off to take a day off type of thing. Like, you don't need to feign a stomach bug or, you know, I mean, I guess at some jobs you might, but I'm fortunate that in this one I don't have to, like, feign an illness. I can just say, I need a break. I'm logging off.
Yeah.
Text me, you know, if you need anything super urgent, but I need a minute. And yeah, that does happen a lot. And then on the weekends, again, really trying to, and even on the evenings after work, just trying to stay off the news and really root myself in, you know, spending time with friends and family and talking about everything that is going on in the world with like-minded people, with friends and family. It just helps you feel, it might be frustrating, right, airing your frustrations, but it reminds me that I'm not alone, that there are other people that are experiencing the same, fears and the same anxieties, and just sadness at everything that is happening. I think that that can be really, really healing. And if you can afford it, go to therapy, even if it's just once a month, see a therapist and talk to them. They're wonderful. Find one that you like, and, you know, just visit them once a month and just get stuff off your chest and let them give you good advice, good coping techniques. That has really grounded a lot of the work that I do. My ability to continue to be able to do the work that I do is because of that. I think that in certain professions, like you are just going to need that extra emotional and mental health support. And that is always, always something you should prioritize for yourself.
I also have a tip that you're interested in farming.
Yes, I am. So my side gig, I guess, is I live very close to the same neighborhood where I grew up, actually. And there's a lot of farms nearby. And so a lot of the, I worked on those farms like in high school. So a lot of the people still know me. So when I moved back after college, I have a lot of ladies that will let me like farm sit for them or go take care of their animals when they're out of town and stuff like that. And, So I really love doing that. And ideally, again, hard to make long-term plans right now. Ideally, I would really love to have a farm one day. My partner does too. We both love it. I think that we're more likely to have like a bunch of animals than we are to have kids. That's not to say we might not have kids, but I think would do animals first just because we love being with animals and out on the farm. And, you know, I grew up riding horses, and right now I farm sit at this rescue bunny farm,
which is
just so adorable. They're so sweet. I love getting to go up there and see them. They're very, very cute. That would be like a wonderful goal. My partner and I joke that we'd like to have like a little commune with like all of our close friends on our farm. And we just
sounds like fun to me.
Live away from everything.
You might get some old folks takers.
Discovered, shout out, I'm not going to remember the, I think it's called Village Hearth. They are in Durham, and they're an actual like
a
co-housing
organization. Yeah.
Commune-esque in Durham for LGBTQ folks. And I don't know, hearing that gave me just so much like hope for the future to be like, oh no, like there are LGBTQ elders that are doing the things that my friends and I dream about doing and talk about doing. And so I think the part of it, that's why I love, you know, shows like this, is because so many of us are, we're young, and this is the first time we've ever witnessed anything remotely like what is going on right now. And so I have found so much like solace and tried to root myself in reminders from other LGBTQ elders that, you know, like, this kind of stuff has happened before, and unfortunately it might happen again, but we have made it through. You know, we have not ceased existing. We did not let them erase us. We are still here. We're living our lives. We're finding joy and happiness. And so that, above all else, has just given me like so much hope for the future.
Another one of the reasons we have the show is to let people know that we are living the life, and we've been living it, and no matter what, we are here, and we are enjoying life and taking care of one another.
Yeah, well, and I have to say, I'm curious. I would like to hear a little bit, and I'm going to jump in here, about the work you do for NC Equality. What's your job, and tell us about NC Equality. Don't assume people know what that is, because they may not. And why should we care, and why should we consider signing up for information and maybe joining?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. So Equality North Carolina, or Equality NC, is the oldest statewide LGBTQ nonprofit in the country. Which is awesome, because
I had no idea.
North Carolina is so rarely first in anything that has to do with like LGBTQ rights, like in a positive way. So I love sharing that with people. But you know, so very, very, very old organization that has been doing a lot of wonderful work for the community. We have two sort of sects of our work. We have a C3, which is our basic, you know, fundraising, nonprofit outreach. We do lots of outreach and education. I've given through that, you know, part of it, I've given so many like trans rights trainings this year to various different organizations, to different groups, virtual trainings to help people stay up to date with everything that is going on regarding the trans community and how heavily it's being targeted by the government right now. And more importantly, you know, what can people do to advocate for their trans brothers and sisters and non-binary siblings to help, you know, help them navigate how to talk about it with maybe their more conservative relatives, navigate resources that are available for trans and non-binary folks. So that's a big part of what we do is the education and outreach piece. That is also where I met Judy. Judy is one of our chapter members. Anybody can be an ENC chapter member. It's open to allies and LGBTQ folks in North Carolina. We have a Western chapter that my awesome coworker Autumn runs. We have a Charlotte chapter that my coworker Alana runs, and we have a Triangle chapter that I run. So anybody can in those areas is welcome to join. And if you live a little bit outside of those areas but just want a community and want group to join, we welcome you. We invite you in. We do meetings once a month, virtual meetings.
That's what I was wondering.
The meetings that we do for our chapters once a month are virtual, and we kind of go over, like, yes, here is what is going on that you should be aware of, and here's, you know, ways you can support work and stuff. But then we always end with just, like, a fun activity. We've done bingo. We've done show and tell. That's been my favorite one so far. Kind of get back mm-hmm. to grade school and just let people show off cool trinkets or pets or stuff that they have.
I remember I brought my happy pill.
Yes.
For one of those.
I love that. I love
that. I'll have to share that with you.
And people have shown off, like, skills, which was, like, so cool before. Like, we had a ventriloquist that was mm-hmm. on, and I'd known this woman, you know, for months. She'd been coming to meetings for months, and I had no idea that she could do that. And she brought her puppet and did, like, a whole skit for it. It was so wonderful. This chapter meeting in October, it'll be this Thursday, actually, and we're painting and decorating pumpkins, like, virtually. Like, we're all going to bring our own little pumpkin, and we're going to decorate and show them off at the end while we have the meeting and while we chat.
That's kind of cool. How can somebody sign up for this? What do they look for?
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to equalitync.org.
Okay.
And there's a tab that says, you know, get involved. You just click that, and it'll bring you to all the different ways you can, you know, volunteer or join chapter meetings or join email lists and all of that, that wonderful stuff. That's equalitync.org, and click the button that says get involved. And it'll bring you there. And then on top of our virtual chapter meetings, we also have in-person stuff that we do that a lot of our wonderful volunteers run. Judy was the person to start something in Chapel Hill called Afternoon Tea with ENC, which was wonderful. And it's during the day, so it is more, I like to, you know, elderly friendly, because, you know, it doesn't involve driving anywhere at night.
Oh, that's nice. And that's important to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which Judy brought to my attention mm-hmm. was like, hey, I want to do in-person hangouts, but some of us can't do that. And so we worked together to right. create this.
Do you have a nice advantage to that is that those of us who are in my generation get to meet younger people in
yes.
Chapel Hill who do drive at night. So if I want to go to something mm-hmm. that happens to be in the evening, I have somebody to call.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is how we build community. You were talking
Absolutely.
About that. You know, we just doing things one-on-one, talking to each other. Do you have one of the in-person events coming up anytime soon?
We just had our afternoon tea in ENC with ENC last week. We have a game night. We spell it G-A-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Game night in Garner, which is more for, like, Raleigh, Garner,
right.
Central folks. Anybody can come, but I know that that's kind of a trek. But it's at a queer-owned bar called The Bearded Lady, and it's wonderful. The owners are wonderful. They reserve a little space for us.
Nice.
Every I think it's the last Thursday of every month.
Okay.
So that'll be on the the 25th. I don't have a calendar right in
That's
front of
okay.
me right now.
That's okay.
But last Thursday of the month.
We can find this information on your website. Do y'all
yes.
have an events calendar?
We do, yep. And you can get on our, if you get on our email list, you'll get emails from me once a week that share all of those details. We have, you know, events
Great.
That go out. We have Signal Chat you can join. We have
cool.
ways you can plug in.
Actually, I have to put in a plug here. The Signal Chat is where I posted our announcement for our picnic with Pride. And we had several people mm-hmm. come to the picnic having seen that.
That's so great.
That's a new place for us to reach out to folks
Absolutely.
To come to our events.
And that's kind of what we're trying to do is just find community. I will tell folks, I know you asked about a calendar, and I'm realizing our calendar isn't public on our main website. That's just because we have different calendars for different regions.
Right.
And we keep a calendar that anybody can add events to. So anybody in our chapter can go post an event there.
Okay.
But because of that, we just don't advertise it. We only advertise it to people that are on the email list and in the network just for safety
sense.
Reasons and
yeah.
for, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
it's always, I hate that we're having to do that right now because it does make it harder to build community when you're too scared to advertise events because you don't want bad actors to show up. But I think that we found good ways to do it like that, like saying, mm-hmm. okay, we don't have a public calendar posted, but if you just sign up for our emails, like then we can,
right.
you know, assist you in getting right. all of the information that you possibly want.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, that's great. Good.
Thank you so much, Casey. I know we have a lot more that we could talk about, maybe a part two. And thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, Casey, it was really great hearing from you. And I'm glad to hear so much work is happening with Equality NC. I was more of a participant many years ago, and it sounds like it's really starting to bubble up and be incredibly relevant these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
So great. So we're going to need to go visit your EqualityNC.org website and see how we can get involved and get on mailing lists. So thank you again. That's our show for today. Thanks also again to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carbaryl at 103.5 FM. And thanks to the Orange County Department on Aging for making Out on the Edge a reality. We'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. If you have questions or ideas for future shows, email us at outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. And now for an inspirational quote today, especially as we come towards this weekend, the next No Kings rally, where a lot of us, I think a lot of us will be there because a lot of our rights are on the lines, especially queer folk. I had the privilege of touring the Martin Luther King Memorial Site in Atlanta this weekend and saw this quote there from Coretta Scott King that I think applies to us all now. Struggle is a never-ending process. Freedom is never really won. You earn it and win it in every generation. That civil rights movement is 100% applicable today. Join us again next week, Monday, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern, for Out on the Edge. Till then, live your joy and your love out loud.